Reishnu. How are we going to? We're not going to finish the perek. The safe on it. Not that far.
Is bringing this out in English?
A lot of it's in English already.
But it's not as.
No, the ideas are contained. If you go through all these things, we'll come up with a lot of the ideas. Yeah, but it really should be. It really should be translated. Where we are, you know. I can't find the place.
Ratio, sorry, one page before Yisur and Shalala. I think Ratio, one page before Yisur and Shalala. Ratio test, well, so.
We're not.
Unless it's a mistake, it's gone from Ratio to Yud Bet.
No, there's a mistake. It went from, yeah, and then. No, that's right, because these are called pages. Yeah. They numbered the pages that shouldn't have numbers. Okay. Reish Yud. We're going to start from the bottom of Reish Yud Aleph. Okay. So we came out yesterday to Maisa was the Maisa of the Tanya. And they asked him where he's going, and he said, I don't know. They arrested him and took him to jail, and they said, what do you mean you don't know? You must be a spy. God is walking. He says, I didn't know. I thought I was going to arrest Midrash and I'll end up in jail. So it was true. I didn't know where I was going. I thought I was going one place, I ended up another place. Pi Hashem Yechonev or Pi Yosu. That person has to live his life. That Hashem, he goes with Hashem.
I don't really understand the story though. Like, I know you're not supposed to
ask a kashra on a maaser. No, you're allowed to ask kashra on a maaser.
So. He was a smart person.
The Baratanya.
He knew that if he just gave an answer, well, I don't know where I'm going, that they're busy searching. That, like,
he didn't know. He knows a curfew. He knows a curfew. No, they said he didn't. No, the Maisa.
Okay, so even if he doesn't know that there's a curfew.
He didn't know there was a curfew. He was walking outside. Someone comes and says, where are you going? So, where are you going? He's a man. She says, I don't know.
I was planning on going here. Like, surely he could have
too much love this. When a shach walked into the Beis Midrash holding a little girl's hand, he walked into the Beis Midrash one day with a 3-year-old, and someone said to me, who's that? He went, oi vey, she asked me about 10 minutes ago to help across the road and I forgot to let go ahead. He walked into the Beis Midrash holding a little girl's hand.
So it could be his
son. So could he learn again? Guy asked him a question. His first reaction should tell the truth. Where are you going? I don't know. Because he's holding on a dad, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm putting one foot in front of the other, I don't know. Yeah. So that kasha, there's too much longness in your kasha. You understand? You have to have seen it though. You have to have seen it. See someone taking 3 steps back after Shmona Esra, and as he takes a second step back, he's just about to say, oh, Shmona Esra, he goes, oh, that's pshat in the Rambam. You know, as he's burned, ah, that's pshat in the Rambam. Totally shakui and learning. I don't know where they were coming or going.
They talk to God.
Sorry?
Totally shakui and learning.
Who says he was talking to God?
You have to daven, you have to.
Okay, so his Yetzirah was. There was one of the Gedolim, I can't remember who it was, Rav Tetz told
him.
He said about in the Chamber of Moshe that for 25 years he had a flash of inspiration during davening where he got the key to a sugya that he'd been bothering for 25 years. Mamash understood a sugya that he'd been schwitzing on for 25 years. In Mulu Shmona Esra, he suddenly understood the sugya. He never used that pshat. He never ever used that maftach to open the sugya because it came to him in the wrong time. It's not the time to be learned. Ask people who knew Chaim Shmulevitz what he used to look like trying to go to the bathroom. Trying to switch his head off from learning just to go to the bathroom. The veins were popping out of his forehead. He had to go to the bathroom, but he couldn't stop his head from learning. He was asked to go to the bathroom. Okay? Alavar, that was my problem, that I couldn't stop learning in Tefillah. The problem is my head's. The problem is not that your head's not in Tefillah, the problem is where is your head? His head was in Rebbe Akiva Eiger. That's the job. That's who we're supposed to get to. That's who we're supposed to be. Where you're so involved in learning that you don't notice what's going on around you. How many times did he saw that we're busy learning in the room where a baby was crying? And the mother came in and said, why don't you do something with the baby? And he went, if I'd heard it crying, I would have done something. Ma'aseh HaGadol Yisrael who had surgery. Who had surgery, okay, without anesthetic. And didn't feel the pain because they were in learning. They just send someone to talk to me in learning and then you cut away. That's, you're talking powers of concentration we don't even believe exist, let alone have ever experienced. That's... Shach was walking once and bumped into a light post and he said Slicha and carried on walking. So if a cop would come up and say to you, where are you going, what do you think he'd say? I know where I'm going. Go on, Ishtar, I don't know where I'm going. different kind of headspace. When they were escaping to Shanghai, they were on a boat, a rickety, shodden, broken down boat. I mean, the Baron told us that when the last bocha got off the boat sank in the harbour. It was lucky. I mean, there was nothing left of that boat. It was a miracle, open nace, that they got off that boat. So one particular terrible storm, the bocha were almost nervous already when the ship was getting bounced or whatever. Rukhan Shulu was just standing on the deck, like looking at the sea, very calm, whatever. So one of the bochum ran up to him and he said, Rebbe, where are we? He said, in Perikimom, huh? What do you mean, where are we? What do you mean, where are we? It was his... Where are we?
How do you strive for that from trying to get a balance of being up here to the other way? How do you...
You don't.
Oh, we're supposed to strive to get that.
You first have to get there. When you get there, then you have to start. To the place where you're so totally taken up with learning that you know what's going on around you. Shedna al Yerushiva Bochi, that's what you should be doing. Obviously not at the expense of, you don't walk out the room, you know, Reb Chaim and slam the door and wake somebody up. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, you've got to have a certain, Rishach didn't go around trampling on people's toes and, you know. Rishach was once sitting learning and someone came and took a photo of him and he stood up and made the broch on lightning. I don't mean anybody was taking a photo of him. He thought it was a second. But see, it's got to be real. It's not, I'm walking around with my Derech Eretz pretending to be a masmid. It means I'm social kunaya, I don't know what I'm doing.
You can't
fly
Lodishma,
Bodishma.
Walk around bumping into
lampas. No, you can't walk around bumping lampas saying Slicha, that's what the Rambam meant when you have an open Gemara for them. No.
Right, but.
You've got to be holding it!
I find it hard to believe that it isn't a cruel Hashem. Like, yes, if a person is going to learn in Yeshiva and be amongst other Yeshiva people, so that's fine. But, if you go to a place where there aren't religious Jews or whatever, like, you're supposed to. Here's our example of a huge
Tom of Kappa. Let me explain something to you. When Shach was out and whatever, dealing with the secular people that came to him all the time or whatever,
completely switched on.
You control, you've got to be in control of your senses. I'll give an example. Just take Rav Shach an example. This is hard to understand, but just take the information and think about it. 24 hours before Rav Shach gave his Shir Klali, he used to give a Shir Klali once a week in Ponovich. 24 hours before the Shir Klali, you weren't allowed to talk to him in learning. No one was allowed to talk to Rav Shach in learning. People came from all over to talk to him in learning. 24 hours before he gave his Shir Klali, you were not allowed to talk to him in learning. He was too involved in preparing his Shir Klali. But you could come and ask him anything else you wanted. People used to come and ask him Shalas about this and this and this. It wasn't as long as it wasn't in learning. You understand that? You have a Shal about you, are you going to business, and you don't know which business, and what should you do, and whatever. Rav Shach was open to all those Shalas. He never closed these doors before his Shir Klali. Just don't talk to me in learning. We don't understand what that means. Obviously, the Chofetz Chaim to write the Mishnah Berurah was locked in a room for 25 years. I mean, and he managed to be Mani Klal Yisrael and meet with the Tzar and go and do and whatever. There's not going to be, you got to know what your job is. But let's say your job's not to be out there dealing with the secular world right now. Your job's to be locked up in a room and sitting and studying whatever. And then that's what you're striving for. Striving to be so caught up in your learning that you don't know what's going on around you. How you deal with that and still function in the world properly when you get there, then we'll worry about integration. First, let's get there. Anybody gets to that point, you know, where you're bumping into poles and saying Slicha, and you know, you walk home like this, and the wife says, "What are you doing? Oh, where's the watermelon?" You know, so you know, there was Rav Shach. He came in the one day like this. The Ponovitch Rav went to see Rav Shach. His wife was having terrible surgery, and he was very fatigued. You have to understand, Rav Shach didn't have one day without suffering. His life was riddled with suffering. So his Rebbetzin was undergoing terrible surgery, and they weren't sure it was Mama Sakon and the Foshas or whatever. So the Ponovitch Rebbe said, "You'll go to the hospital and be with Rav Shach. He's alone. There's no one there. We'll spend time with him or whatever." One of the Rav said, he got to the waiting room. He said, Rav Shach was so deep in a sugya that he mamash looked like a malach. You could see that he was so deep into a sugya, he was so caught up with the sugya that he, Panovichov said he left him, he didn't want to disturb him, and off he went. That's how he dealt with his, you know, that's how he dealt with his. We don't know what it means. We don't, first of all, we haven't seen it, and we don't know what it looks like.
Is that what Hashem wants
to
know?
Dveikus. Samachayim. This is Olam Haba. This is it. This is the most precious.
Not escapism.
I mean, yeah, it depends what you mean by escapism. It is. It's the escape. This is the way out of all the tzoros. This is the escape from the dveikus to Gashmis. It's the escape from all the avayus. That's the ikavayu. That's what a Jew is supposed to look like. Shukui lona. Other blah, the person came in this world to toil in Torah. That's what we have to do. You have to close your gemara to go be involved in panasa. You have to speak to your children. You have to, the Jew has to know what he's part of, but that's betoich the learning. Those aren't external things. First, you have to be a totally well balanced, integrated shalom Torah Jew. That shalom Jew will then make decisions about how to spend his time. He has to go to work. He has to talk to his child. He has to speak to the Rebbe in Cheder. He has to do this. He has to make panasa. He has to find his mother. He has to. Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro was not known for not being a masmid. I mean, the guy was, I mean, his asmada was renowned. And every Erev Shabbos, he would spend a few hours phoning widows to wish them good Shabbos. Tamei Chomim's wives that had passed away or whatever, he'd pick up the phone and wish them, wow, that's Biddle Torah. But no, Gehesh Pon, a Jew has to do things. How many times Yushach would close his Gemara on the spot, get on a taxi and go to Yushalayim? There was once a guy came to Rosh Hashanah or whatever, he wanted him to write him a letter, he wanted to get into a certain yeshiva, Katan in Jerusalem or whatever. So he came to Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah said to him, look, I have to think about it or whatever, come back to me tomorrow or whatever. So that he wanted a letter of recommendation or whatever, I don't know exactly what he wanted, a phone call, I don't exactly know what he wanted. So he said to him, he said, no, go to the yeshiva tomorrow. Go reapply tomorrow, whatever. This guy tried to get him to the yeshiva. Go back tomorrow, whatever. He said, I'll see what I can do. So he thought he was going to phone the Rosh Yeshiva and do something for him, yeah? Then so this kid goes back or whatever, and he says, psh, I don't know, you were so close to Rav Shach. So he says, I'm not. I met him yesterday for the first time. He said, what are you talking about? Rav Shach came here yesterday to speak to us about you, to try and get you into the yeshiva. Rav Shach lived in Bnei Brak. Yerushalayim was at least an hour and a half drive away in those days. So he was very embarrassed. And Rav Shach said, what do you do? He said, what are you talking about? I had to speak to him to make sure that it was, you know, if it was my own son, I would have got on a taxi and gone. Now, where's the cheshbon of Biddle Torah? Because that's what comes out of that. You see it from all the Gedolei Yisrael. This chair's about to break. No, it's okay. Break the break. You see that balance all the time, Mark. Where they were totally oblivious to what was going on, they were totally shook in learning, and yet the Benalim Lechavarahs were outrageous. But this is Zalman Meltzer, was, you read his life story, you'll see time and time and time again, he was totally involved in learning in the Klal or whatever, and yet the smallest Benalim Lechavarah, he had, I mean, nothing got in his way. Nothing. I mentioned the other day, I mean, he was eating breakfast. And his wife gave him a piece of paper with an address. He said, you come home tonight, go to this address, because we sold the house, we're moving to a new address tonight. That's how totally uninvolved he was in what was going on in the house. You understand? You're busy trying to look for an interior and furniture or whatever, yeah? Your wife gives you a paycheck. She says, when you come home from learning today, this is where we're going. You know what I'm talking about, huh? Yeah. And yet you go look at his Benalim Lechavarahs. I mean, when he was bedridden, he wasn't going out for minyan. It was too hard. They lived on a third story or whatever. He had to go up and down the steps. It was too hard for him to daven with a minyan. In his old age, he was too hard for him to go out. But now and again, his nephew used to come and take him to daven. He used to go once every week or whatever, once every 2 weeks. He used to like down the stairs. It was a painful procedure. You know, 3 steps, stop, wait, go, whatever. Eventually get to the minyan, come back. So the one day they came back from the minyan, before they got to the stairs, he says, no, you know what, I feel like I'm going for a little bit of a walk. So the nephew says, fine. So he walked around for a few minutes, went upstairs, you know, slowly stopped on the landing, up, half an hour to get to the door, whatever, gets to the front door, he says, you know what, I could do with another walk. Turns around, goes down the stairs, but the nephew's like, doesn't mean he doesn't go daven minyan, because he can't. And you know, he's going up and down stairs because he enjoys a walk, and he's set. The guy had to come back again eventually, another half an hour to get to the top of the stairs or whatever, and he says, you know what, I really could do with a walk. Twice go for a walk, they come back about half an hour later or whatever, eventually he's like, Platt, what is going on here? He says, the woman, the cleaning woman, came to clean the house today. My wife goes out on the Thursday morning. The cleaning woman came to clean, she's an almana, and while she's cleaning she likes to sing. If I come home, she's not going to sing, she's not going to enjoy the cleaning so much, so I didn't want to come home and disturb her. So when we came back the second time, she was still cleaning, so I didn't want to go in and disturb her. Now how did he even know that the cleaning woman was an almana and she was there and she was singing? I mean, this guy doesn't even know where he lives, because that's what Torah is supposed to do. If Torah is everything, if Torah is Hashem, if Torah is Eitz Chaim Hila Machzikim Bo, then someone who is Dovuk and Oisek in Torah, he has Eitz Chaim, he knows how to live his life properly. So now and again he'll do strange things, a little absent-minded professor or whatever. Okay, he was in his 90s when he did strange things, but these were lions, these were Koichos Otsuma, these were great people. I have a friend who was 35 years old. He was a koyach. I'm talking, the guy was a lion. He took Reb Simcha Wasserman around in America once. Reb Simcha was in his 80s, late 80s already. He said to me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he told Reb Simcha, you go, I can't anymore, I'll get you. He said Reb Simcha wiped him off the floor, he went fundraising. He said he couldn't keep up. I'm thinking, this guy's a lion, okay? He's like whatever, he's a real rough and tumble New Yorker. And he drayed with Reb Simcha, whatever. He said, oh, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he was flat on his face. Reb Simcha was still going, he went till 11 o'clock that night without stopping.
I said that Ravelli was at the age of 80, he used to run.
Rebellion. Yeah, he used to run
from one place to another.
Lions, and but totally shakur. Ravelli, they once came in, he once climbed on the steps to get to a safer, and they came back 8 hours later, he was still standing on the steps with his head in the safer. After Shachris, he would go to the bim and open up a safer and start learning in Talis Tefillin. Everyone would go and whatever, and they come back for Mincha that afternoon, he'd still be standing in the same place. You understand this? We can't sit at the stander for half an hour without a coffee. No, so you have to know who you are. Obviously, we're talking about ideals way down the line, but that is the goal. And you know what? If you can't do it for the whole day, try and do it for half an hour. Try and find half an hour in the day where you're just totally not available. You're totally, totally oblivious to what's going on around you. Try half an hour. Try 10 minutes a day. That's how you become great. It's a piyosin kamaza abazik. A flash of it. If greatness means I'm oblivious, I'm so involved in my learning that no one can disturb me, so then 1 minute of that is a taste of greatness. Try be unsociable for half an hour a day. Unsociable, not being everyone's good friend. Obviously you've got to be aware and you've got to care, and you've got to, of course, it's all about malchaveiros. You can't become a behemoth. Okay, that's the Balatanya. The lesson from the Valatani wasn't that he was so shakun that he didn't know what was going on. The lesson was is that he was so shakun betochet that he didn't have any daigas. He wasn't worried. They took him to prison. They took him to prison. Who's taking me to prison? Hashem's taking me to prison. What's the problem?
That's not what you told us.
I said this is not the shita of Rizkrov. I said that. I said that. I mentioned that. Yeah. Very good. No. You're right. I said this is not exactly what we've been saying up to now. A person first, we said, has to have a daiga. He first has to be worried. And I mentioned it yesterday. I spoke about the brisk growing in Vilna, when he had childs about whether to be in the miklat or into flock. We spoke about that yesterday. It's not exactly the shita we've been dealing with. Remember, we're working in shittas Rashi. It's not so posh to be paskin like Rashi. Hilchos betochet. Hishtanus amitis nechayna mebiya es adam ledveikus bashem tmidis. The correct Ishtadlus brings a person to Dvaikas in Hashem continually. Shavisa Hashem lengthi somit. Haklala Eli, the principle that comes out of this is Shechayim Unu Betochen, Heim Verak Hei Mahavim Aruva Leshalvas HaNefesh Ulurugia. We did do this. It's only the life of Unu Betochen, only it that brings a person to a contentment, Shalvas HaNefesh Ulurugia, contentment, whatever, contentment. Shalva, tranquility, whatever those English words mean. Kashe yudi tzoyed b'betochen b'tminis. When a person is immersed and trapped in betochen and tminis, yad b'yad im HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hand in hand with Hashem. Achshavoisa v'tchneisa mekabolos es ha'izun anochen. What's ha'izun? No, I'm glad you came, Ariel. You know what that word means? I don't know. No.
Not from
Osnaim. I thought maybe something.
Osnaim.
Balance, scales. Integration,
scales.
Scales. His thoughts and his tachnos have the correct balance or something. Ah, very good. He knows his job is to make ishtadlus. His job is to make ishtadlus, and nothing else. What's going to come to him is going to come no matter what. And what's not due to you? Even if Hashem turns the world upside down, if it's not meant for you, you ain't going to get it. You don't have to get jealous because your neighbor got a new car or whatever. Because that's not. He got his car. He didn't get your car. Why do I go to war against somebody else over a piece of land? Because it's my land. It's not your land. Hashem gave it to him. So what are you fighting with? You're fighting with Hashem.
So what is that meter that you want what others have?
Jealousy.
Jealousy.
Rooted in a lack of imunah.
A lack of imunah.
About it? That's why it's Yotzeh Sanah Min Ha'Olam. That's one of the three things that takes a person out of the world. Because that's not reality. Reality is he got the car because Hashem gave him a car, and it would have been good for me to get a car. I would have got a car, and if I got that car, it would have been bad for me. So why do I want what's bad for me? Because I don't believe in Hashem. I believe in my koich vayitzer miyadi. So therefore, I go work a bit harder, make more money, to be able to buy the car. Why should he have it?
So if one was to start machasik themselves in Muna, they would.
You could be jealous in him.
Could go left down.
I've had it. Oh, he got what's due to him. That's wonderful. Hashem gave him what's best for him. Oh, what about me? I also want a car. That's not what's best for me.
So that's also about having an iron top for you.
Yeah, you have a look at those things. If you go through those sugars, you'll see they're all tied to each other. They're all tied to each other. Kinataiva covered. The root of everything is imunah. You can root everything down into imunah. The Shulchan Aruch starts off by telling you that the most important thing is knowing there's Hashem. Shivis Hashem Negi Somit. It means everything I do has to be filtered through the knowledge that there's a Yud Kei Vav Kei in the world. That's the Yisod of everything. That's the Rambam, the first Hilchel and the Rambam. That's telling you that's the Yisod. Everything's Tolu on that. Everything, and there's nothing else that's not Tolu on that. You have to know there's Hashem. That's the first thing. Once you know there's Hashem, so everything else is going to hang out to be seen against that backdrop. But hold on, there's an Hashem. What kind of Hashem? Oh, so have the clear definition of what Hashem we're talking about. That's why the Rambam starts off straight away. The first principle is you've got to know that there's a first cause, there's an Akash Baruch who created everything, and everything comes from him. Everything's got to go back to that. And everything that's not in a line with that will always be, that's out of touch with reality. That's not real. It's a denial of reality. The reality is that there's Akash Baruch. So jealousy and taiva and gaiva and all these things are all lacks of imunah, ultimately. The same way that all the mitzvahs bring you to know Hashem, all the avarice take you away from knowing Hashem. Hayishtadlus eini mo'ila elu mechrochas. Hishtadlus doesn't help, it's a chiv, it's imperative. Why do you make hishtadlus? Because you have to. Ishtadlus yesh toichen bifnei atzmo. Ishtadlus has a purpose of its own. Gam im hi lo hoi lo. Even if it doesn't help, the ishtadlus, even if it doesn't do anything about getting you panosa, it does have a purpose. It's not just tam a hasaga. What do I have to make ishtadlus for? It's tam. It's a hasaga. It's drama. It's a play act. It doesn't do anything. So why make ishtadlus? It's some kind of an act. No, it does have its own specific unique purpose. But the purpose of Ishtadlus is to publicize the fact that there's Hashem in the world. Oh, now comes the question. How do I know in what way I'm supposed to publicize the name of Hashem in the world? Which means, what am I living for? Translates into my chavosa be'alamayim. What is my chiyuv in my world? What's my unique? What's my job? What am I living for? What's my unique purpose in this world? Isn't that what we're all yearning to discover? That's the question. How does he know? According to that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides him with. When a person's lacking panasa, he has to conduct himself in a specific way. A person doesn't have panasa problems, right? So his job in the world is not to go out there and work. That's not how you're supposed to mefasim Hashem. Guy's got $50 million in the bank. His job's not to go and be a stockbroker. That's not his job. His job's to do something else. I don't know, maybe to give lots of stock or to sit and learn or whatever. A guy suddenly discovers himself, Rahman Slan, with an enormous shortage of panasa. So then he knows. He has to go out and work. What does it mean he's got to go out and work? It means he's being told by what he's lacking what his unique tafkid in the world is. Person's not well, God forbid, then his job's to do something else. He's got to be a Kiddush Hashem in the hospital, in the doctor's rooms, or in the waiting room. His job's like a Rebbe and Sirotskin who called the doctor and said, listen brother, don't think you're doing anything here, okay? Don't think you're the big shot, the best surgeon in the whole world. I just want you to know, if I die, yeah, don't worry, it's all Hashem. And if I have a successful operation, you have to know the same thing, it's nothing to do with you. That was her specific job in that moment. What does the Ishtadlis do? It does nothing about getting you well or getting you panos or anything else you need. You know what it does? It publicizes the name of Hashem in front of the whole world. That's what we are. That's what we are living for. Yeah, Josh.
Does it really publicize the name of Hashem? For example, if you see that I've worked a lot, and now I've got money, isn't that hidden Hashem in the world? Because
there's an Israel in everything we do. The Yetzer has access to everything we do. We're talking about how you went about making your money. The people that go to work and they behave in an ethical way and they deal straight and they phone the guy up and say, oh, by the way, you made a mistake, you overcharged me, I'm sending you a check. And the guy goes, what? We don't have a computer program to process that check. You know, no one ever sent the check back. You know, like, please keep the money. That's a Kiddush Hashem. That's a Kiddush Hashem. He's been Magal Hashem Shemayim. Who is it that Baruch Elokei Shimon Ben Shetach? Shimon Shetach bought a donkey from an Arab. He came home and he found there was a jewel, a very precious jewel, tied around the neck of the donkey. So his Talmidim said to him, you can keep it. Look what Hashem gave you. I mean, vice versa, that it was a lachiki, he was allowed to keep it. I said, what's a Shabbos here? Yeah. Candles. So vice versa, from the Gemara, it seems poshut that he was allowed to keep it. Of the Alocha, he was allowed to keep it, otherwise the Talmidim wouldn't have said, wow, look what a wonderful gift Hashem gave you. So he went and he gave it back. He went and he gave it back to the Goy. He went and gave it back to the Arab. He said, I bought a donkey, not a diamond mine. Yeah? So he went and he gave it back to the Arab. So what did the Arab say? Baruch Elokei Shimon Ben Shetach. He didn't say Baruch Shimon Ben Shetach. Because he understood if somebody does it, it's only because of Hashem. A person who goes and gives something back that he, you know, is living on such a high level. It's Baruch Elokei Shimon Ben Shetach. And you see that all through the Chumash. All through the Chumash, when Avimelech had so much covered for Avram Avinu, and when Yosef found favor, whatever. It was because people recognize he has a man of God. This man's living on a different plane. And why is he in a different plane? Why? Because he's such a big Baba? No, because he's Magala Kosh Baruch in the world. Today in business, a Yid today conducts himself in business honestly. You know, he doesn't get involved in the grey areas. He does. You know, that's a Kiddush Hashem. That's a Kiddush Hashem. You call an artisan today, and he comes at the time he said he was going to come. That's not Shaykh. Someone does that. It's like Megala that he's with Hashem. People speak today. Yeah, I'll be there in 10 minutes. He doesn't mean he's going to be there in 10 minutes. He's probably lying through his teeth. We don't take offense to it. We don't even think he's a liar anymore because we got so used to it. Yeah? And when somebody says, I'll be there at 6 and Hamish gets there at 6, you're like, wow, how did he do that? Have a look. You see, yes, somebody, amazing incident. Yeah, you see how Kodosh Am Yisrael is. I just take my car every now and again. I get to see, I'm probably acquainted with all the artisans in the industrial area of Beit Shemesh.
What's an artisan?
Workers. whatever, I don't know what you call them, mechanics and electricians and whatever, workers, I don't know, technical people, the computer experts, all these guys, artisans, workers, I don't know what to call them, technical people. So I take my car the other day to get fixed, and the guy fixes it, and he says, but there's something over there with the air conditioner, you've got to take it to this other guy. He's 100% reliable, you can go there. So fine, I went in there. The guy's got to do quite a big job, so while I'm there, the guy from the Chevra Kadisha, Beit Shemesh, is there with his car. From Gas, I said to him, is this guy... Okay, no, rely on this guy. I don't know who he is. You know, he'll tell me 5,000 shekels, and you know, and he'll connect the wire and say, sorry, you know, we had to read it. You don't know. I mean, you can't trust these people. So he says to me, you tell me if you can trust him or not. He says, I'm here the other day. A guy walks in here, he wants to change the battery. He wants a new battery for his car. 600-700 shekels a battery cost, right? It's good business, yeah. So he says to him, where's the old battery? I want to check it. So he says, no, I need a new battery. The old battery is on its own, you know, it's finished already. He says, no. Checks the old battery. He says, why do you need a new battery? The battery's fine. So Meister Shaharyan, Bela Meister. So he says to him, no, the battery's not okay, I want a new battery. He says, but the old battery's fine. Can't sell you a new battery if the old battery's okay. He says, do me a favor, I want a new battery. So he says, hold on, please. He says, hold on, please. This guy's from the Chevra Kadisha, Beit Shemesh is telling me, this Rav's telling me this Meister. He says, he goes to the phone, he picks up the phone, he dials a number. He says, Rav, am I allowed to sell the guy a battery? His old battery's okay, they're mutar. Now this is not some Talmud Chochem, this is not about that glinting kernel. This is a poshut yid in his overalls with a little kippah about this size on his head. Yeah, Harav, is it mutar to sell the guy a battery? His old battery's okay. Now you got to tell me now, that's not a Kiddush Hashem? I mean, that's a Gilu Shekhinah. How does a guy do that? And don't tell me that he's selling 20 or 30 of these a day, you know, so he can... It's not like, you know, for him selling one battery, that's big panasa. The guys are making, they're 25 auto electricians in the same street. And these guys are eking out a living. They're not doing that well. That's a guy who knows what his status is. He understands what he's living for. I was embarrassed. I'm telling you now, I was partially embarrassed to death. Partially embarrassed. I don't know, what guy comes in, he wants to buy a battery, you sell him a battery. It's not Osir. He's a grown, he's an adult, an intelligent human being. He wants to buy a new battery. Sell him a battery. Well, I've got to go check and see. None of maybe he's wasting his life. That's a very high level, that. That's called valid ishtadlis. That's how you're supposed to behave. When you do that, you're Magal Hashem in the world. You're right, it could look the other way. It can look the other way. I'm going to work, I'm making money. You see, oh, what a clever guy I am. Oh, depends how you conduct yourself in business. Comes fiercely to the Torah, closes the store. No, but hey, guy knocks on the 5 o'clock, he knows he's got his shear starts at 5. 1 minute before 5, a customer comes in the shop, I'm closed. A guy wants to buy something that's a month's rent or whatever. I'm sorry, I'm closed, come back tomorrow. I'll go next door. Good Gesundheit, go next door. 5 o'clock shear starts. There are people that live their lives like this. Should take. What are you smiling about?
That's about the gentleman who started the Dafyomi shear and took out. You told us this story, right?
Tell me, remind me, who's smart.
There's a gentleman started the Dafyomi shoe in Tifa from a certain period, I don't know, from 8 to 9. And he also was running some other business. And for some strange reason, all the deals, all the big deals, all the big phone calls came in Tifa while he was always giving the shoe.
It was in Tifa?
I don't know, in Tifa. Remember, Rob, I don't know.
Who told the Someone told the mice of it.
I don't know, maybe it's a similar story you're talking about.
Who told us a Maisa here not so long ago? Tell me about a guy who had a store and he went to business a certain time, and then the Prime Minister sent his things to come in. The wife was begging him to open the store. That was his
safe.
You left it in the safe. We saw it in the safe. We saw it, yeah. But the Shabbat told us as well. Erev Shabbos. He wouldn't work off Shachatzos on Erev Shabbos, that's right. And one day they came from the Chavis, from the army supplies. They wanted more money than they were making, and whatever, and he refused to open the shop, and whatever. It turned out eventually he got more for it. Those stories have to be understood even where the guy didn't make more money. I heard a story recently about a guy. Kid living in Yerushalayim. He had his car stolen. His car was stolen. It happens sometimes in Yerushalayim, like about every 30 seconds. Quite a bit started in Yerushalayim, right? Quite fifth capital of the world, Kimak. God's quite got started. So his son said to him, no, Baruch Hashem insured. He said, I'm not. He said, what do you mean? He said, in my insurance policy, it says you have to have a wheel lock. The car has to have a steering wheel lock. And I was supposed to buy one and I forgot. So I'm not covered. So I said to him, do me a favor. No one knows. You fill in the form, it says, did you have this wheel lock? You put yes. Who's going to, I mean, you've been paying insurance, you know, you probably, but you're going to get back less than what you paid them, right? So he said, what do you mean? Lie? That's nonsense. You don't get a lie. So eventually he filled in the form and he never got paid out. So my son tells a story. He says, I wish I could tell you that, you know, something, you know, whatever, like, you know, they found the car and there was $1 million in the boot or whatever. He said, no, he possibly lost. But he said, every one of his children learned an enormous lesson. Don't lie. For money, you lie. The person has to give up every penny he's got not to be over in Issa D'Arasa. Lying is a love in the Torah. So you have to give up all your money in the world. So now you're going to lie to get money from the insurance company? How many of us can honestly say, you know, well, pen slipped, you know, did you have a wheel lock? You're going to put there no, but the pen slipped and ticked the yes, you know, no one noticed. I mean, come on, it's one little. I'm saying, how? You know what an insane it is? You've got 50, 60,000 shekels of car. I mean, the Abraham, you've got a car. Do you understand what an insane it is? And the Yitzchak is working there, especially the insurance company. I mean, it's a mitzvah to steal from the insurance companies. I mean, that's how I was brought up.
No,
I'm joking. My father-in-law was a few stories about ethics. No, but I said that's a big nisayon. Person looks like that. He looks like that. There was a famous story about a guy who had a burglary or whatever, and stuff got stolen, and he got paid out, and then he found the thing. So he tried to send the check back to the insurance company. And they thought something weird was going on here. So they sent investigators to check him out. They thought it was a false claim, whatever, and eventually they didn't know how to process the check, so they sent him back the check. It was a whole long story. It was a famous story. My father-in-law told me the story once. He was big in insurance. The guy sent back the check. I mean, let's say you put in a claim for something and then eventually you find it later. You send the check back? Whoever did that? No one does that, right? It's the insurance company, so you got a bonus. Baruch Hashem. Ah! So Hashem loves me. I got a bonus this year. Yeah? I gave so much stock, so Hashem gave me a free ride. So this guy went and he sent the check back, and the insurance company sent it back to him. I don't know what to do with the check. So when did he send it back? They thought the guy was Mamash Agadnet. They sent people to investigate him. They thought he was trying to steal money from the insurance company. That's a kiddush Hashem. that's what we're talking about here. Whether he started this as Magalakov or Shema, I can't remember. I don't know. I can tell you dozens of these stories, hundreds of these stories. What about the kid? He's taking his wife to have a baby. He gets woken up like 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, you've got 5 minutes to get to the hospital, and the hospital's 45 minutes away. You know, this happens regularly, huh? So he puts his foot down and he goes straight through the toll gate. He doesn't pay and he goes boom straight through the toll gate. Because the cop stops him, pulls him off on the side of the road. Where you're going, he says, listen, he says, why don't you phone us? We'll give you an escort. Come. Boom, puts on his lights, takes it out of the hospital, has a baby, everything. A few hours later, the next day, or whatever, I call him, he's on his way home now, right? So he stops at the toll gate to pay for the toll that he didn't miss. So he opens up his window and he's just about to pay, and she says, no, it was a boy or a girl. So he says, look, what are you talking about? She said, no, I told the other woman and the other guy, you come with back, you Jews always come back and pay. He knew you'd come back. So the only guy that came back had to pay for yesterday, he didn't pay the toll, can only be the Yid was there with the baby. So did you have a boy or a girl? That's what's expected of us. Those little things, those aren't big things. That's only a big mistake. That's $1. I don't know how much the toll is, $10 or whatever. You're not going to go again for $10. Yeah, but how many people would think of doing that? You'd be like, psh, the cop helped me, I've got a free ride on the tolls, whatever. You know, who would think of going and paying that? That's Am Yisrael. That's the Ishtadlis, that's Magalakovich Shemaim in the world. People don't say you're a big tzaddik, they say, oh, you see, he's a Jew. Baruch Elokeishim and Benshem. That's the thought. Alright, let's stop there. Lefasem Hashem Hashem. You know how it works in some stores? How do you switch this thing off?